This is Microphone Check, hip-hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly.
I'm Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
And I'm the soul brother, Pete Rock.
PR in the building.
Yes, sir. What's good, homie?
Hip-hop royalty.
Yes, thank you.
That's a big deal.
Well, you know, you too.
Forget me. I don't count.
Okay. Sure you don't.
Just saying.
What's good?
I don't know. It's kind of bugged out because... And we came up at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But y'all, I'm a crazy PR fan.
Oh, man.
So it's like, I'm serious when it's like hip hop royalty. You know, it's like.
Thank you, sir.
It's crazy.
Yo, come on, man. You're timeless, bro. I can't even explain the fan I am of your stuff as well. So
no, I already know this.
Yes, sir.
I mean, that's an inside joke between Pete and I. but no, for real, man. Like, the things that you have done for the art form,
mm-hmm.
and just the imprint, the inspiration, mm-hmm. There's no way that one can mention hip hop without talking about you you can cut it from, you know, what you and CL have done,
mm-hmm.
or just any of your other productions and mm-hmm. all the people that you've worked with, man. Mm-hmm. So it's you know, like an architect of the genre, you are, and to be able to kick it with you just on some regular,
you know,
it's kind of bugged out.
I appreciate it, brother, and you know, I mean, you know, I'm just passionately in love with music, and God is good. He was good to me in hip-hop. He's laid it down and, you know, placed the good people around me to push me forward in this. And, you know, RIP to my cousin Heavy D.
Mm.
Love my family. I have a very huge Jamaican family, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, everyone into music, you know what I'm saying? Whether it was reggae, soul, jazz, you know, 80s pop, rock, you know, you name it, we listened to it, and we loved it, and it raised us to what we actually was able to do for ourselves in the 90s with like I said, the surroundings of great people, and you know, just being a lover of hip hop since day one.
What was like the day one of hip hop for you?
The Bambada days, the Grand Wizard Theater days, HBI, listening to, you know, Magic on HBI and Islam and those guys. Then, you know, from that Supreme Team radio show. There was so many radio shows that were dope. But, you know, I kind of went with the Magic Molly thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, on BLS.
Was that, well, probably because that frequency, at least for me, that frequency was obviously the mm-hmm. easiest to capture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some of the others, you know, Supreme Team, that was kind of hard to catch.
Yeah, it was. But I've had friends who've made cassette tapes of the radio show.
Okay.
So that's how I learned about it. And then, you know, you know, not to forget Jazzy J, Red Alert, Chuck Chill Out, mm-hmm. you know, that whole regime, you know what I'm saying? And then y'all fell into that with Jungle Brothers, Tribe,
mm-hmm.
The Native Tongue thing, Queen Latifah, everybody like that, 45 King, all the stuff Red Alert used to play. You know, all that stuff, I was very attentive. You know what I mean?
What was the first hip-hop record that you bought? Like, you... That was your money, whatever, your, I don't know if it was your allowance, your birthday money saved
up. It was some newspaper money, son. I was delivering them newspapers, you know, paper boy. But yeah, seriously. And I think it was Fatback Band I had bought. Mm. It was a 12-inch on Spring Records called King Tim the Third. You know what I'm saying? Mm. And then I bought that, you know.
Y'all, here we go. You just clap your hands and you stomp your feet, cause you're listening to the sound of the show shot beat. I'm the K-I-N-G, the T-I-M, King Jim the Third, and I am here, just me, Fatback, and the crew. We're doing it all just for you. We're strong as an ox and tall as a tree. We can rock you so viciously.
And then it went from that to Sugar Hill Gang. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Then it went from Sugar Hill Gang to Suck MCs. And, you know, and it goes on and on.
Did you know back then that you would pursue a life and whatever it was your ears were hearing at the moment?
No, not absolutely not. But I knew I wanted to be a part of it because I thought it was cool. When I used to see, like, my older cousins, you know, forming little crews and stuff, have, you know, and his brothers, mm-hmm. and, you know, along with, you know, people in the neighborhood, a guy named DJ Eric J, who taught me how to be funky, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? And Hev's brother, Floyd, who's my cousin, taught me how to scratch, mm-hmm. you know, and then all the little underlings that was down with us, you know, Easy Lee, DJ Easy Lee, a guy in from the hood, you know, taught me speed, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Yeah, so, you know, it was all of that right there was like the beginnings and the coming up of me, mm-hmm. you know, under like Heavy and everybody, you know what I'm saying?
So did Heavy, I mean, I've heard you talk about this a little bit, just being always positive and, mm-hmm. you know, influenced you in a way that just was like, come on, come on, come on, or you could do it, mm-hmm. you know. Did they ever give you that little brother, little son treatment, though?
Oh, you always get son, kid. When you young, you know, you young, you know what I'm saying? And the person is older and bigger, and that, you know, they're like, yo, you know what I'm saying? Because as a kid, I was real curious about a lot of things when it came to music. You know what I'm saying? My pops wasn't home, I'd be in his records. You know, when having them wasn't home, I'd be in their basement. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, they were like, yo, how you get in my house? You know what I'm saying? But they had a little trap door that I used to, you know, go and watch their dog and play with their dog, mm-hmm. Pudgy. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I used to slide through the trap door and be in there cutting, trying to learn how to scratch and stuff.
That's dope, man.
Yeah.
Yo, one of the things, I mean, in addition to your beats or your scratches, mm-hmm. like you being on Marley Marl.
Yeah.
The show was like.
That was a heavy D thing, bragging to Marley. Like, yo, my little cousin is nice. Yo, he I'm telling you, Marl, check him out. And then,
so what was that like, that day? Like, did you have to go to the studio to sort of like interview for the job?
Yeah, Hev was doing the Big Time album. You know, Marley was working with him heavy. Mm-hmm. That was after Mr. Big Stuff, success and everything. Mm-hmm. It's on to the second album, and I'm up there doing scratches on Girls They Love Me song. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that's how, you know, I got noticed.
For fronting and bluffing, cause
girls they love me. She's the overweight lover, Heavy D.
Girls they love me.
She's the overweight lover, Heavy D.
Girls they love me.
She's the overweight lover, Heavy D.
Girls they love me.
She's the overweight lover, Heavy D.
Girls they love me.
What was Marley like when, you know, you did what you did?
You know, Marley Marl, man, I'm Marley Marl, son. Not in a good way, though. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I was a big fan regardless, because I'm like, wow, this is the man that's made the Juice Crew. Mm. You know? Like, I was a huge fan. So I was up in his crib trying to perform for him. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, it worked out. It worked out, man.
It's crazy.
Youngest DJ on the radio in New York City, man.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm grateful to God for that, and Marley Marl, of course.
What did you learn in that environment?
Everything. How radio works.
When you say how radio works, you mean just like the production of a show, or you mean the power of radio?
Well, when I was up there that young, I just was happy to be up there. Mm-hmm. And when it was my time to do what I had to do, I was doing it. But also just meeting artists at a young age, you know, Kid and Play, met Mike Tyson, and all the rappers used to come up there, Red Alert, I mean, not Red Alert, Redman, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, the DJ Scratch, I mean, so many people, man, you know, I met at a very young age because everyone wanted to know who I was, you know what I'm saying?
What was that like in terms, because were you still in high school at this point?
Yes.
So, like,
yes.
You on the airwaves doing, like,
last year of high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, crucial time, at least for me, in hip-hop from, like, 80... What was that?
87, 88.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so, like, from going from 85 into, like, now 87, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Big records were dropping out of New York City.
And big, big records.
There's only two, you know, big radio shows in New York, and pretty much not just New York City, but broadcasting to the world through cassette tapes, you know, being sent out to Europe or whatever from your show.
There's guys over there who has, like, every show of me and Marley Marl.
So what is that like when you go on, you know, Friday night?
It was both Friday and Saturday. Then it turned into just Saturday because he started rotating me and Clark Kent.
Right. So what's that like Monday morning going to school?
It's actually better than going to school. You know what I'm saying? Like going to the radio station every Friday and Saturday.
No, but I mean, like, what were your classmates like?
Oh.
Monday morning, you roll in.
Son, it was crazy, B. It was crazy. It was because I was already doing my high school parties. I was already known in high school for DJing. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I'd be set up in the lunchroom. Lunchroom's huge, you know, with no tables and chairs. It's just lunchroom and dance floor.
What high school is this?
Mount Vernon High. My English teacher, Mr. D'Onofrio, was the one who hired me to be the DJ. And, you know, before it was Eddie F, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then from, you know, Eddie F was the man in Mount Vernon, DJing everywhere. Then I kind of, you know what I'm saying?
Took the spotlight.
In a little something.
Cause like, he was hang off that and jersey on. Up.
Yeah, I mean, now. He was off and running with Heavy D and the boys, so. Yeah,
right.
So I was the man in high school.
So, just what was it? I'm just thinking about, like, high school. I only asked.
They couldn't wait for another party to happen in school, so I'd be DJing that joint. I mean, it was fun, man. Those were the days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What was the high school? What was the prom like then? Were you DJing prom? The prom?
I went to two. I went to my prom, my brother's prom.
I'm just thinking, like, you had to be like the superstar. Like, I only say that because in our graduating year, Jungle Brothers was like, you know, like
raw.
Yeah, you know,
was raw.
So
with it.
Our prom, our high school prom, it was just like a celebration that one could only,
that's what,
like,
I was gonna ask
movies
you.
Are made of. You know what I mean?
I wanted
mean?
To actually turn that question on you. What was it like for y'all in high school? Because y'all started earlier than me.
Well,
slightly.
Well, more Jungle. You know, we all were rocking together, but okay. Jungle was like, yo, they had Red Alert, you know, was Mike G's uncle.
Yes,
so it was just like, you know, we were kind of, I mean, they, because we were working together before they were became the Jungle Brothers, it wasn't like a separation of the unit, so it was always that togetherness aspect. But it was like, yo, they on. And it was just like, yo, they on. You know, like, everyone was proud. Like,
yeah, just the same way as Hev. Yeah. When Hev got on and Mr. Big Stuff came on the radio, yo, son, it was crazy. It was crazy in the hood.
So when you 17 and records are, you know, you watching these records being made, and then now they're on the radio. But you're still in high school, and you're looking at your teachers like
bugging out, talking about Jimbrowski behind the bush, all that. You know what I mean?
Right now we're about to misbehave. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, Africa, shoot the juice. Now I won't say that I'm a lady's lover, but if I was, you'd be under my cover. And not only that, you'd be under my wing, and me and you'd be doing the nasty thing. Whenever you're ready, we could go steady, and you could be my baby and I could be your teddy. It's cold out there, but it's warm in here. I know
your school takes on even lessons, everything takes a different level. It's like you kind of, you puff your chest out, but not in just a, you know, like, I know everything, but it's just like, whatever it is, I'm supposed to get through this education and this route of you telling us how we should be from going to high school and to college. It's like, some other opportunities are shown, and now I can really feel good about it. So it's just crazy.
Yeah,
and,
man.
And all, again.
Indescribable feeling.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, like, I mean, the Mr. Big Stuff remix was just crazy. You know what I mean? On top of the original, you know, all these different things, you know, Ultra Magnetic, Boogie Down Productions, Big Daddy Kane, like all these Masters of Ceremony. It's just like all these records that you feel a larger life in, and you're just getting your foot into it. So
Masters of Ceremony, aka Brand Nubian, circa first, the first version of Brand Nubian.
Exactly. So it's 17. I was 17 as a senior. And I don't know, just I can't really describe that.
It was like a domino effect, man. I'm telling you, man. It was like Hev started, then it just started rolling for everyone. I mean, even in New Rochelle, where Brand Nubian is from, Mount Vernon, cats started, you know, just going hard, man.
I'm just thinking for you though. The only reason, why is because like you're on. Everyone is going to the DJs. Everyone's going to Molly. Everyone's going to Red Alert. Like, here's what I just did, you know, like breaking records. So I'm just like, you kind of like, you.
Yeah, people were coming to me.
You're the king of.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't believe it. It's a special ad. I got it made on the radio. Mm. He came to us with the acetate. Mm. No one else had it. It just came from mastering, him and Howie T. And said, here. And I played every song on the album, on the radio. Every song. Like, every cut on the album, I played it.
I'm your idol, the highest title, numero uno. I'm not a Puerto Rican, but I'm speaking so that you know. And understand I got the gift of speech and it's a blessing. So listen to the lesson I preach. I talk sense condensed into the form of a poem. Full of knowledge from my toes to the top of my dome. I'm kinda young, but my tongue speaks maturity. I'm not a child, I don't need nothing for security. I get paid when my record is played. To put it short, I got it made. I got it made. I got it made.
Did, when people would bring you records, were there records that you were like, I know this is not like the best thing, but you know, how'd you handle that conversation?
I mean, I'd give it a shot once or twice,
right,
just to make the person feel good. You know, I did play it. You know what I mean? I was never the type to, you could argue. I was playing everything. You know what I'm saying? I played 3 feet high and rising, probably the whole joint.
Mm.
I was playing all of that, the interludes, the Jeff thing. I was playing that
See,
stuff.
We don't get that anymore. It's like you get maybe 30 seconds of a song on radio. Like, no one's really trying to go into like in-depth album.
If you ever listen to us, you would hear Tribe interludes. You would hear everything in between. I wanted people to hear it. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, y'all didn't make it for people not to hear it.
No, well, I mean, no, you didn't make music for people not to hear it.
Nah, not at all.
And you speak of earlier of heavy passion, you know, and I know, like, you know, you didn't shield your emotions. You you know, the world saw, you know, felt the pain.
Yep.
And
goes beyond music too. So
yeah, you know.
Yeah.
So with in death and in loss, one of the things that really helps one get over it is life. You know, and
well, you
new
really
life.
Don't get over it, man. You know, it's you gets. I've been to a lot of funerals, been to a lot of wakes. You know, you get used to that, but there's always that same process when it's someone close to you, that's just was everything to you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, and you lose that. You know, it started with Troy. You know what I mean?
Like, well, that's why I bring it up, because with Troy, you created one of the best songs in hip hop.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You know, like, it's has to be easily top five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see it a lot.
So I mentioned death, and I see that song is like new life. You know, and it helps. I don't know what your process was.
Feels,
you know,
crazy.
To get to that point where you could create something that special.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it just comes off as it's like, you know, someone passing, but there's a baby.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That may have been born just around the same time or it just thereafter.
Which
so
that song.
You can look back on that loss, but then you look at
what's created
as like, okay,
you know,
like it gives hope.
I see how you're looking at it.
Or whatever, you know? So What were you going through?
Grief. Just, you know, losing Troy. He was very close to us. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, Mount Vernon is a small town. Mm-hmm. Four square miles wide and long. Everybody knew each other, you know. We grew up on the same block. He lived three houses down from my mother's house, you know. We all grew up together from childhood. Mm-hmm. Kids, you know. And when that happened, it sent shockwaves through the hood. Like, it was just really, and this is a man that taught me how to scrap in the street. Like, mm-hmm. I got jumped, you know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. he came back and made me fight the ringleader. You know, this is that type of guy he was, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And win the fight, because if I didn't win it, he was going to kick my ass. You know, he was that type of dude. But he was a great dude with a big heart, you know, mm-hmm. was all about family and you know, was a great friend to everyone, you know. And then, you know, when he passed, man, that's when it first hit us, like, damn, I didn't think anything could happen to anyone in hip hop music, mm-hmm. you know. And that's when the reality set in. Then, you know, of course, Biggie, Pac, mm-hmm. losing them. It got even crazier.
I reminisce for a spell, or shall I say think back, yeah. 22 years ago, to keep it on track, uh-huh. the birth of a child on the 8th of October, like a toast, when my granddaddy came sober, crazy. Count all the fingers and the toes, now I suppose you hope the little black boy grows, yeah. 18 years younger than my mama, but I really got beatings with the girl love trauma, yeah. In single parenthood, there I stood, by the time she was 21, had another one, yeah. This one's a girl, what? Let's name her Pam, same father as the first, but you don't give a damn, right. Irresponsible, plain not thinking, yeah. Papa said chill, but the brother keep winking, uh-huh. Still he won't down you, would tear out your hide, uh-huh. On your side while the baby make a slide, uh-huh. But mama got wise to the game, uh-huh. The youngest of five kids, hun, here it is, yeah. After 10 years without no spouse, yeah. Mama's getting married in the house. Word? Listen, positive over negative, for the woman a master, uh-huh. Mother queen's rising the chapter, yeah. Deja vu, tell you what I'm gonna do, when they reminisce over you, my God.
So he was on the road when he passed away.
Yeah.
And who
was home in New York when I got the news. They called me crying, you know.
Who was he with?
He was with his crew. He was with his people. You know, they was on tour. You know, Kid and Play, Heavy D and the Boys, Salt and Pepper, I think, Keith Sweat. It was a tour. And they were in Minneapolis. And I think Chuck D, too, Public Enemy. And it happened in Minneapolis, you know. I wasn't there, but they told me the story of how, you know, guys were playing. And, you know, I know how it is on the road when we play, you know what I mean, like kids and stuff. And it's a freak accident, man. You know, he didn't even know where he was sitting was 20 feet deep, you know. And when he got through the, he was throwing them too. So when the guy threw it at him, he tried to dip out of the way and fell over 20 feet.
You know, right.
It was horrible. You know, felt bad for the family. And, you know, that's just a time I'll never forget that phone call, I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm. That's how my cousin died, actually. Mm-hmm. He just fell 20 feet.
So sorry to hear.
You don't even know. But what was his job? Like, why was he on the road?
He danced for Heavy D and the Boys. He was one of the dancers, you know. He only had two dancers, G-Wiz and Troy, you know. And he was on the road, on tour.
Back then, like, when budgets were a little bit bigger, mm-hmm. did the crew that went on the road, was it bigger than it is now?
You used to bring all your friends. You should have brought everyone. Almost the damn near the whole neighborhood came on tour.
And why did he do that? To, like, get a normalcy
to celebrate and let people know that there's more to life than just being in the street. You know what I mean? Try to give people jobs. Hev was one of those people that if it was dark and you couldn't find your way, he'll stick his hand out. You know, and that's how he was with everyone.
Yeah. You know? 'Cause I think there's a misconception about, like, the entourage.
Nah, man. Nah, we do that just to show people the world. You know what I mean? There's more to life. You know, than what you see in the hood. You know, and he was good for doing that all the time. You know, that's just one thing everyone wants to kind of experience. You know,
and that comes out of his pocket, also.
Yeah, well, it's every D, you know what I'm saying? You know, it is what it is, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, when we're all young in this business and there's not a care in the world about what you're doing with your money at that point, you know what I mean? We're having fun and you only live once, and that was the motto.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You can't take money with you when you're dead, so, you know, all you could do is spread it.
Mm-hmm.
For the children you leave behind or family members or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for talking about that stuff, because I know it's painful.
Yeah, very, 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 very painful. Very painful, but you get stronger after some years of, you know, going to a lot of funerals.
Mm.
You know, I actually went to James Brown's funeral, touched his cold body, like, wow. Yeah, you know what I mean? Serious fan, had to go. Sharpton was there. People was there. He had on his little the Michael Jackson glove on.
Is there anything to the idea that New York hip hop is like has some of that pain in it?
Yeah, from losing Biggie and Pop, and just people dying in hip hop. What? That's unheard of. You know what I mean? Like, hip hop is an opportunity. It's just when you get on, you know, spread the love. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And when Big died, when Pac died, it just all hit home. It was very scary at that time in hip hop. This, you know, uproar of '90s East Coast West Coast thing, and people were getting killed off the radar.
Mm-hmm.
You know
right.
what I'm saying? So it was crazy. But, you know, we live and we learn, man. You know what I'm saying? Never let something get too out of hand. You know, cats are sensitive and dudes get mad at the drop of a pin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Do you find, because a lot of, you know, your music is just like, it just, y'all just rips through you. You know, you choose like, you know, like these horns of life, you know, like these crazy soul laden, just like thick, just melodic, fat sounding, drums are just like, it's just sitting
it
in the right place.
I was musically charged, man. I had some adrenaline going on, man. Like, I'm serious, man. Ever since I think after I met James Brown as a kid, I was 7 years old, man.
You met James Brown?
Yeah, and I shook his hand, man, me and my younger brother, yo.
Where?
In Mount Vernon, he came to do a concert. My mother took me to a concert in the hood. This place called the Left Bank. And, yo, she walked us in there. We didn't know what we was getting, right? So, boom. JB's and Bobby Bird, everybody's on stage. No James yet. Then he walks out. And then I just kind of froze, B, and was watching the show. Then she's like, you know, during halftime, you know, he had halftime. So... during halftime, he was backstage. My mother took me to meet him. And I just remember him saying, God bless you, God bless you, and shook his hand. And I think from then on, he passed something on to me. I'm serious, man. He had the power. And, you know, I don't know. I got it from maybe touching him. You know what I mean?
That's
straight
crazy.
Up. Yeah, straight up. And then I wasn't the same since. I always was... music always intrigued me, though, even since probably like 3 or 4 years old. Pops was, you know, record collector, big time, playing music all day, every day. So that's what really put it in motion. But then as I got older, you know, I always got more curious.
Do you find that you're able to find anything made now from R&B or jazz that's like now, that's current, that gives you... that sort of like, I want to sample this, I want to chop this up.
Oh, yeah, big time, man. This jazz is one of the pieces of music that I always loved because of the melodicness and how deep it was. You know what I'm saying? Like, If you listen to Miles, a lot of people will listen to his music and be like, well, I don't get it. You know what I'm saying? But you gotta listen. You know what I mean? You gotta use your mind and open your imagination. But musicians like him, Thelonious, John Coltrane, the list goes on. Roy Ayers stands out in my head the most because of what he had to, like, just when he plays that vibraphone, it just puts you in a trance. And then his music in the 70s mixed jazz with funk.
Yeah.
And that's what I did with hip hop. Took jazz and made a hip hop form.
What's it
but
like?
Y'all did it first. Tribe. You know what I'm saying?
We're not talking about Tribe.
Okay. I'm just saying though. I just throw that in there. You know what I mean? History's history, bro.
It is, but you know, the interesting thing about it is, you know, what we've done with you know, what Lodge Professor's done, you know, what Premier's done, what you've done, it's everyone has it, the same sort of influences, but just completely different, you know. So
that's how I feel about Dilla, you know.
And Dilla.
Yeah.
What's your relationship with Roy Ayers, considering, you know, growing up on his music to sampling it to actually working with him?
He's like my second pop, man. It's like Pop. I call him Pop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a real cool cat. You know, had a lot of stories to tell. You know, I dug deep in him one day and was like, yo, tell me some Polydor stories, man. You know what I'm saying? He told me about a story where James wanted him to do a show for him. Inviting him up, you know, James had an office at Polydor, and he came up there and worked out a show. And Roy said he didn't do the show because something was funny with some money. You know what I mean? And you
never
know,
changes
exactly. And then James got at him the next day and was like, "Yo, what happened, man? You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, like." And then that was it. He told me that story. You know. And,
I can't imagine James Brown stepping to Roy Ayers.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, now I think about it, yes, I can think about it. Yeah.
You know, James was crazy.
Yeah, he was a little militant on it.
You know what they say about crazy people? They're geniuses. So.
Yeah.
You know, that was an ill story. But he's a great man. Roy, like the best person you ever want to know. And, you know, I musically dug into him as well, and I told him, you know, I was naming records, and he's like, oh, you know, certain things he don't even remember. I'm like, yo, you remember when you did this, blah blah blah. Love that when I'm around him, you know what I mean? And that's it, really, you know what I mean?
Do you think some people say that hip hop has died, you know, or it's suffering a death? Is there anything that you see now that is like that baby?
Very interesting question. I think potentially there could be something. I see that the new generation, some of the new generation, idolizes what we did in the 90s and tries to bring it back. If you listen, in certain records you hear, you know. But, you know, the majority of the radio is basically R&B that don't sound the same, and hip hop that doesn't sound the same, you know. And you know, when we did it, it was real. It was actually original style of hip hop making, like records. You know what I'm saying? Like it was a style we owned. You know what I mean? But it was also real music. And and today, it's just a little different from what we did. You know what I'm saying? A lot different. Lyrical content is not as good as what we had to say, you know, and that's important because now, being older, having kids and stuff, I'm a father and everything like that, and, you know, my kid gets out of school, I want to pop on the radio and it's safe, you know what I mean, but it ain't, unless you have satellite radio and you could make your own choice, you know what I'm saying, but otherwise than that, though, to sum up, I think there could be. It, you know, music, the world turns, music changes, it keeps changing.
Yeah.
So hopefully it can change back to what's real,
yeah.
You know, not to what we did in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to kind of repeat those great records we made. We can't.
Yeah, that's.
We could only do what our soul, you know, allows us to do.
Well, there's some talk of, like, in this question of what is real hip hop and what is not, that you can't just make a diss record anymore. Like, people are criticized for not.
Well, they don't know how to do it. Like, if you came up in hip hop and listened to battles, mm-hmm. you know, they were done respectfully. You know what I'm saying? Like, it started with, like, Kumo D, Busy B, and then as rap and everything elevated, then you had LL going at Kumo D and Ice-T and everybody going, but nobody talked about hurting one another. Yeah. It was just about, yo, I'm better than you, yo. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It was about that. And, you know, now people getting personal with you, you know, in the battle, they going at you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Straight up getting...
crazy gunplay talk.
Right.
Off your head, I'm standing like...
all of that. Doing their homework on things that may have happened to you in real life and expressing that. You know, just getting real personal with you, man. You're making it real hard to, you know, make rap a joyful place. Yeah. Hip-hop a joyful place. But, you know, there's always still a road on the side of the road everybody's on. Mm-hmm. There's always a little secret road right here. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's how I see it.
I like that.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, there's, like, the new young generation is like, there's no real leaders.
Yep.
Can I say that
absolutely
safely? Everybody's just following everyone.
No leaders, and it's
so this road is real crowded and trafficky.
Yeah.
You know, compared to this one.
Lack of before it was a lack of at least a father in the home, and now like moms are barely there. You know, so you got grandma.
Some unfortunately and some just irresponsibly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so it's really it's kind of hard to place blame for these kids taking the position that they take,
mm-hmm.
you know, when they have to discover the world truly on their own,
mm-hmm.
you know, and in the world of an art form or occupation that they can make a lot of money in.
Yeah. Then after 9/11, everything just got, you know, there wasn't nothing realer than that day right there.
Yeah.
Nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was the serious wake-up call. And, you know, ever seemed like people just changed after that.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, everything. Music, more people, more angry, you know, can't even listen to the radio, watch TV. Got a bunch of reality shows that's just, like, degrading women and our kids. And, you know, little kids are seeing that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you...
calling, slapping hip-hop on it.
You've always, at least one of the dynamics I really love of you and CL mm-hmm. was just that it was like you guys were teaching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the music, the whole, everything was just well architected.
Yeah.
Like it's a building, you know, a strong building.
Yeah.
Like the Guggenheim or something, you know what I mean? Like, and CL is one of my favorite rappers just because his wordplay is crazy. His cadences is just, I mean, smooth. But then rough and hard at the same time, with just
Street edge.
Yeah, street edge. Yeah. And a lot of dazzle, but substance.
Yeah, definitely.
Check it out, give me respect. Check it out, give me respect. Check it out. Check it out, check it, give me my spec.
Hit the lights and I appear beyond the stratosphere of impeccable function. And if you're pretty, let your lady sleep in Carmel City. Beginning in the day, you're landing hunts for beach punch to lit blunts. Now all agree with sipping OJ with the donkey. Bounce and bring it like it counts to be lucified. CL is sanctified and women spell me nationwide. You say you want my lips where and I can grab your what? I love your hips, legs, breasts, faces with the firm butt. Now feel the muscle when I hustle in the bed sheets. Cause my manly treats can hit the fridge for more sweets. Splash and let me do my thing till it's hot and sweaty. Reload the camcorder, I guess by then you'll be ready. Cause all my children got one life to live. But knocking wifey out the box is clearly a negative. I'm in rugged wears with fancy facial hairs. And all the real shit come in pairs. I'm bouncing in the house, y'all.
And I noticed that, you know, you make songs that make you think, you know, and just hearing you talk about 9/11 and just the world changing, I feel like there was a huge lesson. And I would think that after that, that the music would be a bit more real. But it seemed like it just went to more fantastical, just like, I don't know what to call it. Is fantasy some of it, or...
It's sad when you listen to some of it, you know? And it's like, wow, man, this is a huge change. Because, you know, I've seen a lot, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So you're still working, though. Yeah, like, you know what I mean? So it's just, you're in a position where you have artists like Joey Badass or just a whole bunch of different, even Kanye, you know, who has, like, his arms stretched across the world. And really, if there's any representation of hip-hop, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, he's very keen, too, like, with what he knows.
So I'm just thinking, you know, with the records that... I know you stay recording. You came in here with your equipment.
Yeah.
Sitting right there. He's ready to hit the studio right after. Are you able to direct some of the younger, the Mac Millers, the Absols, or whatever?
Oh, man.
With that same, you know, conversation that maybe you and Corey had, like, this is the design of what the thought should be of the song.
You know what it is? It's with the certain dudes... That's reached out, like the Pusha T's, the Kendrick Lamar's, the Absol's, the Mac Miller's. They all are fans of 90s hip hop, like big time. And it, you know, telling me about song. Oh, you remember this joint? You know, like, and it makes me feel good to see that. You know what I'm saying? And we just need a lot more of that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And unfortunately, you have prisms now of hip hop. Like, you can go to each, whatever kind you want to listen to. You got the ratchet hip hop, and then you got, you know, real hip hop. Then you got commercial, you know, and you got the southern, you know, you got the South cats. And to me, when I thought of the South, Outkast immediately comes to my head. You know, those are, to me, were the realest cats I've heard come out of the South, and Ludacris, you know what I'm saying, on the spit tip. Like, but now you got so many areas in hip hop that you can pick and choose. But overall, I would want real hip hop to swallow all of that and just keep that shit real. You know what I mean? And, you know,
what does that mean? Like, what does that sound like? How can you tell if it's real or not?
Originality. You know, doing something totally unheard and totally, you know, new sounding. Not necessarily just something, you know, like finding a sample no one's ever heard in their life, and you putting the world onto it by making a beat out of it. You know what I'm saying? Is the best feeling a person could ever have, you know, and making a successful, you know, hip hop song out of something like that is how we built our legacy. You know what I'm saying? And to me, you know, we need more of the music to be original, and we, you know, real could be another word for original. Okay. But that's what we mean.
I read an interview. You talked to Complex and you a couple years ago, and you went through a bunch of your classic records, and one of them was the Juicy remix, and you said that basically you wanted to make a hip hop version of that song. Can you describe how you did that?
That actually was it. You know, me and Puff grew up in the same neighborhood. So when he had Biggie, we were all happy for him. You know, he brought Biggie over, and we started a relationship, and I ended up doing the remix, where, you know, I just kind of kept the same sample and just changed the drums a little bit. And I thought it was, you know, it was decent, you know, but people responded to it like it was, you know, the remix of the year, you know. It's just changing of the drums. I didn't do nothing.
Yeah, but see, you say that.
Yeah, they're two very different songs to my mind. Wow, like, wow. And like, and to hear
the
you
describe. The original's dope too.
I'm not saying it's not dope. I'm saying there is a, I mean, the word dusty gets tossed around a lot, but I mean,
I get it.
Yeah, so I get it. Why to you is that like more hip hop than, I guess you could say, a more polished, the shinier version that is the single?
Because if you listen to hip hop records, mm-hmm. that's done, the way the drums are done, the pattern of the drums you hear on other hip hop records.
Like, yeah.
You know, like.
It's like a language.
Right. And, you know, I was speaking that language when I made the remix and just said, you know what, let me just. Because the record was an actual radio-friendly song, you know, yeah. And then before that, it was M2Me. So
right.
When Biggie did it, you know, it just, and being how dope Biggie was already, he told me, I think I remember him saying to me, yo, Hev used to inspire him on certain joints, like when he used to listen to Somebody For Me that Hev did, you know. And that's all it was for me when I did the remix, you know.
Right.
Yeah. This album is dedicated to all the teachers that told me I never amount to nothing. To all the people that lived above the buildings that I was hustling from that called the police on me when I was just trying to make some money to feed my daughter.
Yeah.
And to all my peoples in the struggle, you know what I'm saying? It's all good, baby, baby. It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Marley Mall. I let my tape rock till my tape pop. Way back when I had the red and black lumberjack with the hat to match. Remember rapping Duke? The ha, you never thought that hip hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight cause I rhyme tight. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade. Corn Center, the opposite of a winner. Remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner? Peace to Ron G, Brucey B, Kid Capri. Fuck Master Flex, Love Bug, Star Ski. I'm blowing up like you thought I would. Call a crib, same number, same hood. It's all good. And if you don't know, now you know. Now
you
know.
You kind of like underplay it a little bit by just saying, oh, I just changed the drums. Like,
it's, I did. That was it.
Yeah, but.
You stripped some things
and
out.
And unique, y'all. And I put the Spoonie G in there, I think.
But that's hip hop.
Yeah, that's why I said. That's what I was explaining to him. Like, you know, taking the old school joints from Enjoy Records. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. You make it sound, but that's. Everyone can't do that.
People. Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, it's technique, it's understanding, mm-hmm. you know, the culture, mm-hmm. understanding the feel of everything, but everyone can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter what school you go to, it's something that you have to be anointed by the creator, you know what I mean, to really be able to architect something that simple as you just saying, oh, I just changed the drums.
Like, yeah.
There's a choice of drums, you know, and for remixes specifically, like, to me, I don't think anyone's mastered a remix the way you've mastered a remix. You know, like, Shut 'Em Down, the DOS Effects, Just Some In.
Yeah.
It was like...
I was always into, like, trying to just blow out the original, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like on some, when I started doing them remixes, man, I was like, all right. Because I think I was, you know, coming off of working with Hev and mm-hmm. making dope joints with him. Then, boom, just started doing them remixes. And then that's when Pete Rock, CL Smooth started.
Mm-hmm.
Started, actually. And, I was just on it. I was like, everything was hip-hop to me. Like, I would hear the original version and just say, all right, now. I would hear music in my head just all going at the same time.
Mm.
So I would try to emulate what was going on in here. Same way James Brown did when he was thinking of Funky Drummer and trying to tell his band members, yo, play it like this. Yo, this is what's going on in here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it was for me with the remixes.
and remixes are like crazy.
Thank you, sir.
Like,
thank
you. It shifts. It's something that I totally rely on when in DJing, when you want to just, you know, like really, especially, well, I guess I was going to separate the US versus like Europe or Asia, but I just know in Europe, there's certain frequencies that resonate with them just a little bit differently, even now, you know, 20 years later, you know, so, you know, it may be a kid that might have just been born in 1994. 293.
True.
So, you know, like they they may be one, no clue as to what this music is that's going on.
Yeah.
You know,
good and fathers know good music. They're going to teach their kids that.
Absolutely. And, but, yeah. you know, you go into the club, they don't know what the Just a Man original, let alone the remix. Never, and it's like, they're straight confused because they never heard this before. But it's just them frequencies. When the scratch is just top of the song, just comes off and then it drops. You and I watch the room and I'm like, they were a little annoyed at first and now, but the feeling of the music just has captured their bodies and they're just like going with it. And you don't get that with original songs, let alone, you know, the remixes that are being coined as remixes now. Are you still excited about getting remix jobs? Do you still do them or not so much anymore?
I'm not really excited no more, but, you know, remixes didn't really count then when I was doing them. You don't get publishing for that, for remixes.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Talking those were
just, I was just saying, okay, let me just showboat a little bit and show people I can do them joints. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, later, like now, today, I guess it's cool to bring back the sound of it, you know what I'm saying? But they don't count. Today, you gotta make a count. You gotta make the hit song. You gotta make a hit record. You know what I mean?
So you get that conversation a lot. Is that like, I get that from publishers a lot. The conversation. We're talking business now. If you're now really checking in and really paying attention to the interview, the business aspect of the music business definitely plays a role into
And what just you're doing like, we all had questions about publishing later on in life, like now. Because when we were young, we had no clue on what we was doing. I've never seen a check beyond 6 zeros in my entire life. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, then we just didn't care about that. All we cared about was that. You know, wow, money, you know, just the normal things that come with the music business. But now that it bit us in the booty a little bit, you know, so to say, but to learn about, our music and owning our masters, all that's important. You know what I'm saying? We didn't know that then, but now we do. And it teaches you a valuable lesson about how you proceed in the music business.
Your solo records, are you putting them out yourself?
Yeah. Independently. So it's good because you don't have to worry about nobody recouping nothing. You know? Recoup was the big deal back in the major label days.
Still now.
Yep, right now too.
Missing a couple royalty checks behind. Well, that video.
They got people out there that find stuff like that now.
That video, you guys forgot about that last video, of course. Still ain't recouped this side of the deal. Like,
did you know you had this much money out there, such and such and such and such?
Do you ever plan to put out more artists on your own label?
Yeah, definitely. I met so many good young artists today, right now, that show homage and show, you know, how it's really done, how they would want me to see, you know, like, are they doing it right? You know what I'm saying? And they some people know, like, you know what, let's get a beat from Pete. Let's work with Pete. You know what I'm saying? I know he has a lot of knowledge on how to make music. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I can't wait to start, you know, get everything in motion and start, putting these guys out.
What are your thoughts on
those guys, whatever?
on the mixtape aspect of
you know what is funny about that? You know what's funny? It's the same thing as a remix, or it's the same thing as it's another term for album now.
Yeah.
Now people are calling mixtapes, I mean albums, mixtapes, because on a mixtape you can do anything you want. If you, you know, you don't have to worry about sample clearance. Mm-hmm. You could just go in and do whatever. That's kind of what I did with Camp Low.
Mm-hmm. Just 80 blocks.
Just kind of slap some things together and, you know, did that. But you know, to mention what you said, you know, that's one of the tactics I always took, you know, in making hip hop music, you know. It was just fun to me, man. Fun doing all that stuff. Mm. You know what I mean? Like we used to look forward to waking up the next day to go at it some more. You know what I mean?
Is there anyone out there now that gives you that feeling of like, oh man, I just heard, you know, someone new that's up and coming, and you go.
Well, at that time in the 90s, when I was making Eye and Eyes album, that's when Dilla appeared.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm. And to me, after that, he still knew. You know, he was only 32 when he passed away. Mm. So when I met him, I think he might have been like 29, 30, something like that.
What was that like meeting him? I mean, I'm asking from your perspective because I know how much of a fan he was of yours.
Yeah, and I'm of his. It was crazy. It was crazy. Spent the whole week in his basement at his house and spent the night, no hotel, in his house, just sleeping. Getting up the next day, looking through his records, like, oh. He has a lot of stuff that I've never seen that I used to be like, wow, I'm totally been sleeping. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That dude just, you know, a lot of 80s records he got his stuff from. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, stuff in the 80s.
Progressive steadily, rock records and stuff.
Like yeah, and I'm steadily digging in the 70s still. I'm, you know, that 70s mm-hmm. guy in them older joints. But that guy, man, stayed a whole week there, and his mother secretly said, she was like, you know what, he used to always say he wanted to be like you. And I'd be like, what? What? And I'd be like, yo, he done took it to the next level on me.
That's why I'm wondering, like, what was that whole week like?
It was crazy, man. I had Grap, my brother Grap was with me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we would take us around Detroit, show us the whole D. They would have shows performing songs I've never heard in my life. Mm-hmm. The crowd is going crazy. Like, they know this music. And I'm like, yo, why? I don't know none of this. So then I'm asking them to make me a CD of all your shit. Mm-hmm. Like, yo, give me some joints. And, you know, it was fun.
Did you guys work on anything together? Yeah. He showed you how he does his thing?
Yeah. Made beats in his basement, and we did songs in his basement. He had this track board thing. You know, I remember, you know, laying the SP beats down. Mm-hmm.
Did he show you anything that made you go?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, of course. On that 3000, I'm like, oh, that's how you do it. Ah, you know, stuff like that. And I'm showing stuff on the 12 that maybe he never knew with the SP 1200. You know what I'm saying? And it was like kid in the candy store, man, with the both of us, because I was a fan too. I ain't gonna front. When Tip played me the cassette of his beats, I was like, yo, for real? Is a dude out there like making this thing type of beats? And then I met him, got a plane ticket, and just flew there. I said, I have to meet this guy.
Dope.
Did he pick you up at the airport?
Yeah, blasting Mecca and the Soul Brother. He was driving the Navigator. Lincoln Navigator, and as I'm coming out the door, he's rolling the window down, blasting For Pete's Sake. He's blasting it, and I'm getting in, and I have a cassette of beats on me, so I'm popping that in, and he's just going nuts. You know what I'm saying? Then I was like, I know you got some shit, yo, come on, play me something. And he goes in, and I'm like blown, totally blown.
Yeah, away. He upset us all. Oh,
us does. One won't do it, two is not enough for me, no.
Now let's take it from Tiffany. How this thing went from Jacob to Tiffany. Could've kept it real with this real nigga, or kept your mouth closed, maybe we could deal with ya. See, it's two freaks, the wife and the boss. Had all three of them liking it raw. Pimp put on weight from fighting them all. In the mall, you see it and like it, it's yours. That's a nice fit, you ain't got a price shit. I pays for it like the mics and the sauce. We pack big bags out of Saks Fifth Ave. Mr. put them in the back with a fifth back. I need space for all of my women's. In these days, the arguing was limited. I replace the broad if she tripping. It's deep game and all in the pimping. You got one, that's cool. Nowadays, everybody got two. That'll do, but I need another one. Yeah, and another one.
One won't do two, and it's not enough for me, no.
Line them up.
One won't do it, two is not enough for me, no.
Blown away, like, yo, I'm like, yo, this guy's gonna have me out of a job.
I was just about to say retirement. You hear what those sounds you're hearing is not the illest. It's the yo. Someone just signed off your retirement slip.
Oh my goodness, that guy, man, he was unreal.
Ship off, say, Grandpa.
To this day,
finished.
Yep. To this day, I'm like, yo, that dude is not from Earth. He's not from Earth, man.
I just asked, you know, if he showed you anything, which is just, you know, of says course. A lot about being open, because mm-hmm. some people are so closed off. But mm-hmm. we just recently talked with Large Professor. Mm-hmm. And I'd asked him, what did filtering, learning about filtering, did he remember that moment when he first learned about filtering? And he said, yeah, you guys used to, you know, rock, and yeah, you were homies back then, and you showed him how to filter.
Yes, sir. And then Eddie F. showed me how to filter, because we were all new to this equipment. So when Eddie got the equipment, Eddie was like, oh, wow. Oh, and then I'm like, oh, so then we start messing around with it. And then start finding things. And then we're playing around and we're doing this and we're doing that. And then one thing about me that I used to always get from Tip was like, yo, what's that wah-wah sound that you do? It was mm-hmm. this certain EQ I had in Green Street. And to this day, I'm trying to find that EQ. Mm-hmm. I know I can get it, but it was this EQ. It was dope EQ, and it was very sensitive. Mm-hmm. So when you turn the knob, it's already making the sound. Like, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So we fixed it to where it was, you know, this is technical talk, by the way. So we were fixing it to where a certain place to where I know where I wanted to get. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I used to do that, and Dilla asked me, like, yo, what is that? It's a wah-wah pedal? And I had everybody thinking it's a wah-wah pedal you hook up to a sample or something. No, it's an EQ.
That's crazy. Tip never shared that with me, but yeah. Thank you. I got it from the man's mouth.
Yes, sir.
Is there any other piece of technological innovation within maybe like the past 5 to 10 years that mm-hmm. have kind of made you feel excited about sampling, as with filtering? Because I know when I first discovered I could filter, it was all the records that you never touched that you could, now you can go in.
I stopped sampling half a bar loops to one bar loops to making it bigger. Mm-hmm. And the Joy song I did for Jay and Kanye was a perfect example of a old beat that I redid on the MPC and just added Curtis's vocal in there mm-hmm. as well. So if the before the beat was just without Curtis, mm. it was just the beat, you know, with the bass line, the guitar, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I said, let me go back and listen to that song, and I was like, yo, oh, this part is funky.
Add a little sugar, honeysuckle, and woo, a great big expression of happiness. And roses,
Mr. West.
Such what a style of beauty. The joy of children laughing around you. These are the makings.
I do it for the 4 5. dollars, yeah, the street office. That are now A&Rs in the cheap office. Rappers that never get signed, but they keep offers. Girls, it's way too fine for us to keep offers. Gave her a handshake only for my man's sake. She in a birthday suit cause of the damn cake. Now it's crumbs all over the damn place, and she want me to come all over her damn face. I never understood Planned Parenthood cause I never met nobody.
Is it just because, like, you just had a different look at it, or is it just something within technology that makes it?
I had a different look at it, being that it was the new generation, mm-hmm. and you heard a lot of, when, you know, producers sampling soul music again, mm-hmm. with singing in it, and some on 45, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But here, I wanted to sample the actual singing on 33 the way it was made, mm-hmm. which kind of, you know, I think was kind of, it hit on the money. Jay-Z immediately remembered the song. He said his mother used to listen to it. Mm-hmm. Blew my mind when he got on the joint. So I was like, oh, okay.
Do you have to, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's okay.
No, go ahead.
Can you explain what it means between the 45 and the 33?
You know, it depends on the human ear of a producer. It's like how you hear, how would you rock a sample? You know, some people do it on 45, some on regular speed, you know. But I've heard a lot of interesting sound on a 45, or at the actual speed, you know. Of a 33 LP.
Mm-hmm. Played on a 45.
Yeah, played on 45.
So it's higher.
Yeah, it's higher, but there's also, you know, certain things that only sound right on 45, believe it or not, because you're right. So used to hearing it another way, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you know, it sounds just more interesting when you change it up a little bit.
Right, right. And how old was that song, the beat?
Which song?
The Joy.
Oh, man, since 1997, 98, I made that on the SP 1200.
Okay.
Yeah, SP, man. Can Magic I ask Machine.
One more technical backup follow question. Mm-hmm. When you say the EQ is at Green Street, what is that? Like, why can't you get it out of there?
No. The Green Street is no more now. It's an art gallery. It's no more studio.
Oh, it's gone?
There. Yeah, it's gone. So before they got rid of the place, they were selling the equipment in there. And I went back there to see if they had the EQ there still, and they didn't. So. But I remember the brand, at least, and I've been Googling it, and just, you know what I'm saying, going
on eBay every day looking for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Craigslist, anybody. You got a fake name, fake account.
Seriously. I mean, you know, it's just on some music stuff, but.
Now I know why we wound up recording. Mm. Part of Low End at Green Street now. Now I know why. I was like,
I remember seeing Bob in there, and I was like, what is he doing here?
I'm like, Tip, why you want to leave Battery? Like, it's whatever. He was just like, nah, I just want to mess with Green Street. Now I know why.
It's a great sound in there, man.
Yo, that's hilarious, man.
Two A room, B room, B room is the bomb.
Yo, the things you learn.
Yep.
Man, I want to talk about the studios, because fans aren't aware of this, how studios are very different, how rooms can sound very different, and then also, like, the vibe is different, who mm-hmm. comes through where. Mm-hmm. So what was special about Green Street, and then I want to get to Battery so that we can get into Illmatic that way.
Okay. Green Street was just special because that's kind of like, no, actually the first place I worked on my own was Chung King.
Okay.
And I was 16 years old, and I was working with a group called Groove Be Chill.
Yep. Wow.
And starting from zero album, and which I ended up doing the title track, and I'm like, wow, that's crazy. And then I did another song on there called There It Is, where I was struggling with the engineer, you know, not knowing what to do. You know what I'm saying? Just, you know, and then it started working out. You know, each day I would come back and try again. Till we get this right, you know, because now I'm on a deadline. Mm-hmm. So boom, we got it done. And that was one of the first productions I've ever done, you know, with that. And then Green Street was just a place that I loved the sound. I actually sat and watched Bomb Squad make Ice Cube's album, America's Most Wanted. And I knew all the producers, from Keith to Hank to Steve to the other little brother. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, that's how I ended up in Green Street.
And where was that?
On Green Street, in the Village, 112 Green Street, between Spring and Prince.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then what about Battery? Was Battery special, or is that just where you were when you're working on
Battery? Was special because Jive Zomba was in the building, and I think from the label being there, created the studios. I don't know how long they've been there, but I know from, you know, you had a successful major label right mm-hmm. upstairs, you know what I'm saying? And I'd done work with Fresh Prince in there and Jazzy Jeff and mixed the Nas The World Is Yours in there. And while I was mixing The World Is Yours, DJ Premier was in there at that. And there was a few other heads in there. There was a couple other dudes in there while I was doing the scratches and, you know, stuff like that.
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine. It's mine. It's mine.
This world is this.
It's yours.
Yeah, I tell everybody in Queens, the foundation. The world is yours. To everybody uptown, yo, the world is yours. The world is yours. To everybody in Brooklyn, y'all know the world is yours. The world is yours. Everybody in Mount Vernon, the world is yours. Long Island, yo, the world is yours. Staten Island, yeah, the world is yours. South Bronx, the world is yours.
So you were talking earlier about 2001 and after 9/11, things sort of went downhill.
Mm-hmm.
When Nas appeared, and the anticipation for him,
mm-hmm.
for Illmatic, was so great.
Mm.
Was the feeling in hip-hop in 91, 92, similar in some ways to how it was after 9/11?
Yeah, the excitement for him was at a high level because of how he sounded, his flow, the Snuff and Jesus line, and you know what I'm saying? Like, that was what caught everyone's attention, you know, and then Lars Professor brought him around. Everybody, introduced him to everybody, and you know, we started working on beats for him. You know, the mm-hmm. Q-Tip, myself, Lars Professor, LES, and DJ Premier. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Faith told me that she felt when she finally signed him, found him, and signed him, that hip hop was getting a little bit too pop, or
yeah.
what was on the radio was pop, and that he might sort of solve some of that problem.
Yeah. But, you know, even at that time, it was still a good time. The radio wasn't so bad. You
right.
know what I mean? Like, just people wanted more. You know, you had Hev mixing R&B and hip-hop together. So a lot of that you heard with, like, SWV records. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? You heard, you know, Father MC, certain artists, you know, with that sound. You know what I'm saying? So it was a good sound. You know, I loved it. You know what I'm saying? But, Nas just brought the streets back with
yeah.
Illmatic. Like, that's a straight street album. It's just, you know, when you in the hood, you know, Illmatic is like held on a pedestal. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those albums that if you listen to what he's saying, it really happens everywhere. Like, everything he says is the truth. So, on that album, you know what I'm saying? Not mm-hmm. saying he's never spoken it. He's always speaking the truth, but with Illmatic, it was something that everyone could relate to,
mm-hmm.
because you know every situation he spoke of was relatable.
Yeah. And you said Primo would sort of be around Battery when you were just finishing The World.
Well, he was just happened to be there because
yeah.
he was heavily involved with the project, and when I was mixing The World Is Yours, he came through,
mm-hmm.
and I happened to be doing the scratches at the time. For the breakdown, and he said he was there just spectating and watching, and you know, it made him go back. The song, the actual song itself, made him go back and make better beats for Illmatic.
Mm-hmm. So there was
that's
competition.
That's how he got, you know, represent. Mm-hmm. That's how you got the Sitting in the Park joint,
mm-hmm.
and the other one, New York State of Mind.
So everybody knew that they had to get on this album. I mean, those are some legendary producers, and they mm-hmm. were already, you guys were already legends.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you all knew that this was the guy to get behind.
Yes. Yeah. 150%. You know what I'm saying? 150%. Never heard a lyricist quite like him ever. You know?
Yeah. Did he inspire you?
Yeah. Inspired me to give him a dope beat. You know what I mean? But the ill thing is, I didn't really know how great I would sound singing a hook.
Right.
Until now, you know, I'm like, listen, I didn't want to do it. You know, I didn't want to do the hook. I was like, I ain't no singer, man. You know what I'm saying? Because I used to hum on certain records. I did, you know, be humming, playing around though. You know, and he really wanted me to sing.
Thank you for humming.
So, you know, it worked out.
Yeah.
I say that because I hear some of the stuff when Dilla would be humming, it just reminded me of you.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. I'm pretty sure you gave him that inspiration.
Yes, sir.
Did you ever meet Ahmad Jamal, who that's who you sampled for that? The World Is Yours.
Short story, right? Going to the doctor's office one day, right? Dermatologist, right? Got a wart on my finger, okay? I go to the doctor, right? The doctor's name is Samira Jamal, right? Okay. Cool, go in there, boom, boom. And so we just start talking, you know what I'm saying? So I just, told her what I do. I said, I do music. And she's like, oh yeah, my dad does music and stuff. And I was like, oh yeah? Oh, she started telling me she's been to Japan and all this. I said, so who's your dad? And she's like, he's jazz artist. We listen to jazz. He's Ahmad Jamal. I almost had a heart attack, man. I was like, what? I said, the world is that small, man? Dang. Who would have thought? I'm walking in, his daughter's a doctor, a dermatologist. My dermatologist. I didn't know that, bro. Total freakish. Totally, it was crazy.
Who'd you call after you left the office?
Everyone. Everyone. Yo, I just met Ahmad Jamal's daughter, Samira. Yo, crazy. And then I was just going in, and I was telling her, I was like, yo, the I Love Music song, you know, that's what I use for you.
Did she know Nas?
I don't know. She knows the song.
Yeah, she knows
I mentioned
the song.
It. She's heard of it, you know, so. I don't know if she's heard the actual song, but she knows.
So, but she was never able to make a connection.
She probably knows now.
No, but I mean to connect you two and get you two in the same room.
Oh, I don't know where he's at. I never even thought of that part. I was so excited. I was so spilled over with excitement. Like, I just forgot to even go in like that. You know what I'm saying? But I can easily call her and just be
like,
you got
to have a follow-up appointment or something.
Ain't nothing wrong no more. But, you know what I mean?
That's crazy.
Yo, isn't that nuts, bro? That's crazy. That struck me like a lightning bolt.
Did you know when you were making that song that it would have the impact? That it's, again, another lineup, most important songs in hip-hop.
Yeah. I knew it was going to be good because of Nas, and it was a good beat. Like, it was very explosive, just the both of our talents together. It was like, wow, you know what I mean? Wish I could have did more with him.
Mm. You know what I mean? Crazy, man.
Yeah.
Have you, do you get approached by, it's funny that she, did you clear that sample, by the way?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we did. That's why I'm talking about it. I'm openly talking about it, because yes, we had to clear the sample.
Were there any samples that you haven't cleared that you just feel like, you know what? I'm good there.
You know what? Mech and Soul Brother haven't gotten cleared for a long time, but they cleared those samples.
Mm.
And then, there's stuff that you couldn't touch. You know, Bo Hannon, for instance. Mm. Not a nice man.
Mm. Does it change your approach? Or do you just still go in like whatever?
Nah, still go in. Just. It's so many records in the world. I mean, when we dead and gone, there's stuff that we still ain't gonna have. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. This is like, That's why I be such a beast, you know what I mean? And trying to find, look under the rock in your backyard or something, you know what I mean? I'm serious.
How do you dig now?
Any chance I get, you know, a lot of the times I like going in these mom and pop stores, old shoe stores or old, you know, like antique stores where they got records in the back or Salvation Army. But now you got mom and pop stores that alphabetically have things in order and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like stores like that a lot. And don't overcharge you because they know what you do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, this record was $3 before you knew who I was.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
What is your family life like? Not to go too deep and personal, mm-hmm. but you have longevity in the music business. So I'm just like, you know, for the kids out there that's listening, you know, I know coming up when I was 19, my family structure was broken to begin with. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. and trying to have a real, you know, growing up and then wanting to have your own family in the midst of, you're working all the time, you know, you're always on call. There's a huge demand for you outside of the home.
Yeah. You know what? Family is how it all starts, man. The love that you get, you know, that you feel. Some people, like, you know, are not so fortunate, you know what I'm saying? Or born into difficult situations. But I was fortunate enough to have family that loved me, you know what I'm saying? And that's what, you know, makes you, it gives you a sense of happiness and say, you know what? Oh, wow, I can feel like I, and then you feel like you can conquer the world. So why not start with music? You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of where my life ended up. And then now I have a son and a daughter, 15-year-old and an 8-year-old. And, you know, my daughter loves Black Eyed Peas, and, you know, I don't mind. And, you know, I've even worked with them before doing a remix with mm-hmm. James Brown on it, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Called They Don't Want Music. And it's ill because the message is like, James is saying all they like is the 808, boom, 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 boom. Because in this remix, he goes boom, 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 boom. And he's talking about, yo, all they like is that boom, 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 which is the 808 sound, which is a lot of the South
mm-hmm.
hip-hop that you hear,
mm-hmm.
and strip club music and all that. They use a lot of the TR-808.
So what kind of education are your children getting?
From me?
From you.
A lot. My daughter lives with her mother, but my son lives with me, and, you know, he just wakes up with it. You know what I'm saying? And he likes, well, the first Macklemore song with the $20 in your pocket, mm-hmm. you know, he's 8 years old. He loves that song. You know what I mean? And, he likes some other one, forgot the artist name, but, and then, you know, Eric B and Rakim from there, KRS-One,
mm-hmm.
Nice and Smooth, Jungle Brothers, Tribe Called Quest, Gangstar, he gets it all.
They taking any interest in watching, and looking over your show, DJing? Yeah.
He's actually, you know, he likes video games, so I bought him DJ Hero,
mm-hmm.
so he plays with that. You know what I'm saying? And then I said, you know what? When school's over, you're going to have your shot at learning the real thing.
That's dope. I started when I was 8.
Yeah. That's when I started. 7, 8. Yep.
So what's the key to success? It's been 20-some-odd years.
Man.
Going.
You know what? Surround yourself with good people. Do it passionately. And whatever you feel in your heart that you love doing in life, go hard.
Mm.
That's it. You know what I'm saying?
Simple.
Yep, simple as that. You know, that's all. That's what we all did.
Yep.
You know?
Still doing.
Yes, sir. Still doing it right now. You know?
Thank you, sir. You got to go to the studio right now.
Yeah.
Back
thank
to work.
Thank you very, very much.
Oh, thank you. I feel like I still got a few more questions, but we're going to maybe get you to come back.